questions.
Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And as you know, love letters are for anyone at any time about anything. Whenever you have a memory or something wonderful to say to somebody, why keep it to yourself? Why not write it and stamp it and mail it and have a whale of a time doing it and make somebody else's life just even better? I'm going to go right to our guest today, Sandra Foster Lovas, who is a San Francisco writer, and she's going to read her letter first, and then we're going to talk about it. Go ahead. You start right in, darling.
Thank you, Janet. My dear Dorrit, you are a surprising human blend, sophistication leavened with warmth, elegance mixed with naturalness, Danish practicality alternating with fancy, and extravagance with frugality. The same blend informs your unmatched taste, the coziness of your dramatic interiors, the cleanly stunning way you dress. Your gifted eye spots beauty anywhere, lightning fast, discarding vulgarity just as fast. I've seen you enter auction previews, kludged with thousands of items, and immediately spot the two or three best things. I'm equally struck by the direct, attentive way you relate to everyone, be they king or pauper. Thanks for relating to me that way when we met at that Persian rug auction. I, a refugee from Houston, friendless here, thrilled when you invited me to brunch, so we could come to know each other. Well, we've certainly done that over decades now. You see me and everyone so clearly, valuing what is best in us, forgiving what is not. I love your avid curiosity, your searching intelligence, reading and rereading thousands of books, including hundreds stored floor to ceiling in your own library. Your zest for travel is fueled by that same curiosity, that same intelligence, plus a robust appetite for adventure. Always your brave confidence inspires me, Dorrit. You could have had an easy life after wedding the love of your youth, son of Switzerland's most noted film director. But a grab for self-realization propelled you to Rome, where you knew no one, had no means of support, and spoke not a word of the language. Perhaps you inherited the strength of your great aunt, Isaac Dennison, the strength she showed in Kenya. In any event, after Italy, you bolted to Hong Kong and later to San Francisco. Here, you morphed into the best interior designer in the U.S., your work featured in Architectural Digest prominently and often. You conduct all dealings with highest integrity, and many projects you've designed gratis for charities or acquaintances in need. You've designed for many friends as well, in the end insisting, "I don't profit from my friends." I look around our own rooms, seeing the antique thresher you found, the coffee table you designed, fabrics you chose, pillows you redesigned, accent pieces you gave us. These enrich our lives day in, day out, constant reminders of you. Appreciation for all I have learned from you, mostly by osmosis, how to arrange a room, how to harmonize an outfit, how to live with flair and grace, authenticity, and open-heartedness. Dorrit, I marvel at the strength and courage of your 25-year battle with Parkinson's disease, confronted unflinchingly, resourcefully, and without despair. Ever hopeful, you're always open to experiment, but then you've never been averse to risk, whatever the stakes. As much as I admire all these things, I most commend your generosity and compassion extended to many people and many animals. In my mind's eye, I see Three greyhounds you adopted from the track serially and loved insanely, each named Mr. Brindle, each mourned at death for 6 or 8 months. Mm-hmm. I see birds in large antique cages or filling your rooms with flight and song. I imagine the Filipino monkey you endowed with a new home there. I see a parade of indulged cats, one of them golden, the last two black, both named Angel. Never have you bought a pet, saying they must come to you in strange ways, and they have, oh, they have, the present one, the world's most loving and most beloved cat. You bolster everyone you know, whatever their plight, often helping tangibly with labor and our cash. I know of endless acts of personal kindness to the old, the sick, the financially despairing. Indeed, you are the most loyal, most giving of friends, not just in time of celebration, but in time of woe, ever ready with sympathy and advice. Over decades now, you've lent both types of solace to me in your handsome rooms, usually by a comforting fire. Always I've left grateful and uplifted, a feeling beyond compare, a gift beyond price, a friendship beyond extraordinary. You are a treasure, in many ways the best person I have ever known, and certainly the one with the most self-definition. My eternal gratitude and deepest love, Sandra.
Well,
I have been blessed.
Oh, well, so has she. So has she. All right, let's talk about all of this. This is just
rich.
Yes, this is just rich in so many ways. You talk about a gift beyond price, which is her friendship and all that she is to you. This letter is a gift beyond price. You're nodding and smiling. I need a television show. You have to see this beautiful face here.
She will receive it, so she has saved every note, mostly thank you notes, that I've ever written her. She loves my writing and the cards I select.
Okay,
she will
especially
love this.
All right, so let's talk about why this is so wonderful. I always say, and I think everybody says and knows, that a love letter is a gift custom designed by you for one person on this earth.
That's right.
Now, obviously nobody else could get this letter ever. And also the specifics is what makes a love letter great.
True.
So I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, and beyond the specifics, because you're so special doesn't mean much. It's a nice feeling. But what makes you so special is the gift. And let me just ask you also, so I'm stammering because this is just so wonderful. This is a love letter that is essentially a biography of what you love. You have written her story through your eyes to tell to her.
That's right.
And I think it's wonderful that we should see each other most accurately, I've always felt, and that is through the eyes of someone who loves us. But you have paid so much attention. Isn't that the gift?
I think so. Her life is extraordinary. And I've never written her or said anything to her as comprehensive as this.
And how long did it take you to write this? I'm just curious.
I probably wrote it in about 40 minutes.
Did it come spilling out or did you write thoughts first?
Oh, it came spilling out. Mm-hmm. But then I edited and tweaked.
Yes.
And
to make sure you were really saying everything you wanted to say.
Right. And next day, you always have an addition or two.
Oh, yes.
And a better wording or two.
And did you mail it to her?
I haven't yet,
good.
I will.
Because I want to talk to you about that.
All right.
Okay.
I will.
And you've got it typed out beautifully, because I understand that it's easier to think when you're at a computer. Because fingers fly fast as you think, and maybe handwriting doesn't.
And you see it on the screen clearly.
Yes, that's right. And you can, as you say, you can tweak it. But will you write this in your own handwriting? It's long. And that's
it's
also
long. I thought of just maybe using a prettier font and prettier stationery, but I could. She can read my handwriting.
That would be, I think handwriting is just king.
Yes.
Because everybody has the pretty font and nobody has your handwriting.
That's true.
And, you know, you are how you write. I mean, and when she reads it, every time she reads it, and I know it won't just be once.
No.
She'll be holding something that's really felt the touch of your hand all over it. It's like holding hands in a way, you know?
She reads in bed a lot mm-hmm. and maybe increasingly. And I wonder if handwriting is as easy to read.
Oh, okay. So I have a thought. I think handwriting in a love letter is really crucial.
Maybe I'll send her both.
Yes. Okay. Oh, aren't you smart? Somebody did that for me once, sent me a thank you note. Mm-hmm. And I always say it doesn't, I mean, I'm pretty good at reading handwriting. I think most of us, if we take the time, we can decode. This handwriting was so awful. This man, God bless him. It was a wonderful note. And it was really, I couldn't even do it. I got part of it, but I couldn't get the whole thing. And lo and behold, stapled to it was something. It was the same note typed out.
He had gotten that feedback.
Yes,
from
but
others.
He knew to do his own handwriting because, you know, he's put in the time and the physical effort
to do both.
To do it.
Good point.
And that, but also, you make another point. She's getting older, and eyesight as the years go on isn't ever what it used to be. So to send a copy, I like this. I mean, I've advised this also. Send a copy in nice big print.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever font you like. Not too fancy, because that's hard to read
that's
later.
True. That's
curly
true.
Curly Q's get tougher as we get, you know, 90 years old, 95. It may be hard to, I don't know how old she is now, but, you know, God willing, she'll get there. Okay, so talk a little more about her, because you said she could have had an easy life. Was she married, and then the marriage
ended? She was married. Mm-hmm. She is from Denmark and was engaged to someone else mm-hmm. at age 18, mm-hmm. I think it was. Met this man from Switzerland, mm-hmm. and they fell instantly very much in love, and she broke the engagement mm-hmm. and married him and moved to Switzerland. Mm-hmm. For several years, and loved this man, still does, and only says wonderful things about him. But for the type of spirit inside mm-hmm. of Dorrit, mm-hmm. she had married much too young. She had been, you know, sheltered.
Oh, even this man from Switzerland, she was too young to.
Oh, too young.
Uh huh.
Too young. She had never lived on her own. She mm-hmm. had been with her family.
Yes.
And then with him, and he was from a wealthy family,
mm-hmm.
but she felt she hadn't lived, she hadn't attained, she hadn't found out who she really is in the testing ground of life.
Now, so I'm just curious what you think. Had she stayed married to this man, would she have discovered the same Dorrit inside of herself as she became?
I think probably not.
Oh, okay.
You can't say, I mean, her basic values and qualities would be there, I think.
Would she have been able to express her artistic style like she has?
Perhaps only for herself. Mm-hmm. She might not. In fact, she told me one time that they don't have interior designers in Europe, or it's very rare.
Uh-huh. Why
people,
is that, I wonder?
People do their, go by their own lights.
Mm-hmm.
But here, it's very, she had been in design school in Denmark,
mm-hmm.
General design school. And when she got
Because Danish is a very specific, forceful kind of design. I mean, that whole life of modern, Danish modern took over the world at some point.
Absolutely true, but absolutely not what Dorrit does
at
all.
I see that, yes.
Which has been pointed out
right.
when her work has been featured in mm-hmm. design magazines. That being Scandinavian, one might expect,
right.
And she does a...
she's cozy rather than
very
crisp.
Cozy,
yes.
But very dramatic at the
yes.
same time. So she did have a design background, some training, and just an inborn eye. Got to Rome with not very much money. She said she was just going on a trip mm-hmm. alone, mm-hmm. but she never returned. And wound up at a... clothes design house, the Fontana sisters, a big designer in Rome at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And and designing, and they would have her hand paint some of the clothes, which scared her to death, lest she ruin these beautiful, expensive gowns.
Oh, she was actually painting the fabric.
Painting the fabric at times.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Whatever they asked her to do. That was her first job, paid job in Rome. She had never done interiors until she ultimately got here after a stint in Hong Kong.
Do you know what motivated her to start?
She was working for a florist, and there's a big-time designer named Val Arnold who came to this floral shop because he was doing a benefit with flowers on the table.
So she saw it in action.
She worked with him just on that benefit with the flowers and that room design, temporary room design. But he saw something in her and said, I would like for you to come work with me and I'll teach you interior design, which he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he later moved to Los Angeles. But that's how it all got started.
So you talked about her having the spirit of her ancestor, Isaac Dennison.
Yes.
So for those who don't know who this is, we talk about her a little, and once you start, I think they will know.
I thank you. Her other name is Karen Blixen. That was her real name. Isaac Dennison is a pen name, but she was the woman who wrote Out of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And if you saw the movie with Meryl Streep and Robert Redford, Out of Africa, this portrayed her great aunt, whom she calls Baroness Blixen. They look a great deal alike. And Dorrit was fortunate enough to travel to Kenya for the first time about a year ago, a year and a half ago. She'd always wanted to go, and one thing and another, she had never gone.
So even with the difficulty of the physical challenge? Uh-huh.
Yes. She was a little better then, and for the full 2 weeks there, she was fine. And she was with two friends who were traveling with her. And she said on the day they were to visit her great aunt's home, which is a tourist destination in Kenya, she said she didn't feel like dressing much that day. And they said, oh, why don't you? Why don't you? So she did kind of wear an English riding outfit, linen riding pants, very lovely.
So she's lived on her own all these years?
All these years. Mm-hmm. She's fiercely independent. And her friends tipped off the press over her objection and without her knowledge. And they took a picture of her standing by her great aunt's portrait. And they look almost exactly
alike.
She's
beautiful. I can see from those photographs in the magazines.
Yes, very refined looking and beautiful. Just really a fascinating person. And then her generosity of heart to everyone, no matter who you might be, the garbage man delivering something, makes no difference. She is at ease with anyone all up and down any social spectrum and relates to them very directly and very much in the same way, as I said in the letter. Just an extraordinary gift, I would say.
And you've known her for how long now?
She was the first or second friend I made after we moved here in 1978.
Uh-huh.
We met in a strange way. We had a place, we just moved into a place with all hardwood floors and needed area rugs.
Oh, that's what you said, the auction, yes.
And I'd never really studied or bought those. So I did some instant expert reading and went to this rug auction, and by happenstance alone, sat by this lovely woman who was also alone, and just started talking to her, and I was making comments on the rugs as they would be offered with my instant expert knowledge, and she would comment, and we hadn't even introduced ourselves, so we were just talking as though we knew each other.
But were you close to accurate with what you were saying about the rugs? I'm just
What I said was accurate, I think. But it was, you know,
Okay, so it was instant, but you learned something meanwhile.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. So afterwards, she gave me her name and phone number and said, you know, call me sometime. Well, of course I did. I had not a single friend here.
Oh.
So I called one evening, and we talked and talked and talked and talked. And then she said, oh, you'll have to, and she invited me and my husband to brunch the next Sunday at her home. And then she said, you'll have to excuse me now. They're here from Architectural Digest photographing my home, and I have to move some things for them. I'm an interior designer. So we left the conversation. I went to Andy, and I said, Andy, this woman that I met at the rug auction, and she's an interior designer, and I was telling her all my just newfound knowledge on these rugs. So we've always laughed about that.
So I think really being a lady is a matter of making other people feel graceful.
I think so.
Yes, that acceptance that you talk about, that's really what elegance is about, isn't it?
Very classy, very classy woman, just in every way, and yet very forthright and very adventurous.
I can see that.
Very gives her opinion straight out.
Isn't that a blessing?
Not untactfully, but not varnished, and will give, you know, anyone the benefit of her advice. I don't know. She's just a remarkable person. Totally pulls her own strings. Very, very strong, and yet so quick to tears when something moves her.
Yes.
Very accepting of people. She has her standards and her strong ethics.
What are her standards like? What would she never do?
Well, she would never overprice a piece of furniture that she'd acquired for a client.
Oh, so you're talking even professionally. She's totally trustworthy.
Totally. Totally. And say she bought it for one price when she bought it for another. She would say she bought it for a certain price and then maybe a small percentage over that for labor or something fair. She would never charge a friend, and some of her friends have taken big advantage of
this. I would imagine,
and she's done several full homes for them. I would not feel comfortable with that because she will not accept money.
That's a hard thing to cross over.
Yes.
Because people seem to think if they ask you for services, it's nothing to you. You know, just do me a little favor. I need your eye to... If that same person had a dress shop, no one would walk in and say, gee, I like these two. Can I just have them? I mean, they wouldn't do it.
No, and I don't think any of her friends asked for that.
Yes, I see.
Necessarily. She just, it was her canon of way of being.
So she wasn't put in a corner then. She was, this is something.
No.
She, oh, good. Okay.
No, she just had the, I think some thought they were going to pay her when they started. But she would say, oh, no, you don't profit from your friends.
Yes.
This was one of her
you mentioned that.
Ethical values, that is not something that one does. And after knowing that, I only would ask her for a few things and advice and a few things.
On the other hand, that's kind of too bad because you find yourself limited by, you know, you don't get to go to the best for something big because, Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we, if zillions of dollars fell from the sky on us, we've always said we would go to Dorit and absolutely insist. And if she wanted it given to a charity or something, we could do that. But we wanted her. But she is retired now from design. And
However,
this is fascinating about her, she's still redesigning her own rooms, which have been perfected in many incarnations over the years. I tell her she's like Sarah Winchester of the Winchester Mystery House, who had to keep building or believe that the ghost in her house would kill her. Well, Dorit doesn't have to keep building rooms, but she has to keep redesigning them. And I saw her just 3 or 4 days ago, and she had a lot of energy that day. And she took me all over this three-story house, oh, up and down, showing me how she was going to be redoing.
What do you think that's
rooms.
About, redesigning and redesigning? Just the constant need to express yourself artistically and...
Exactly. Uh-huh. It's her greatest form of creativity. Yes. It's her life. She sees, and she's done this in all the residences she's had. And each time, you know, they're perfect, but then she just wants it a different way, and she moves things around. Mm-hmm. She doesn't get rid of everything. Mm-hmm. She has things that she loves. She reassembles, but she adds new or puts them in a different room.
Did you think that kind of desire, I thought about this before, you know, people who do interior design, sometimes the goal is, I don't know what, but other times I can see where people, and I'm looking at the pictures of what she's done, really want to create space in which people can be comfortable and communicate.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It has to be cozy. Mm-hmm. And everything you would sit on or lie on or lounge on has to be physically comforting, physically cocooning.
Yeah, enveloping.
Enveloping, yes.
So that you can express your own self in her design space. Oh, this is lovely. How is she doing? You said she has Parkinson's disease.
She does.
And is this, if she's taking you up and down stairs, is it limiting her at this stage in some ways? Or
it is limiting her in some ways. And she did add an elevator to her
good.
Home mm-hmm. about 5 years ago. But sometimes she doesn't use it. Mm-hmm. She should and knows that. And sometimes we're taking the elevator the other
night. So she's accepting of this also?
Oh, and yes.
So, I mean, it sounds like it's become just her new reality.
Yes.
With which she gets along.
She says, people say to her, well, don't you wonder why you?
Oh, people don't.
And she says, well, no, I just think, well, why not me? She's been very realistic about it, but very hopeful. She has a wonderful doctor who's basically a research doctor down in Sunnyvale, but mm-hmm. he keeps a few patients to keep a hand in treatment. And he's experimental, and she told him he could experiment it any way he wished
with
her. Oh,
my goodness, that's really a giving soul, isn't it?
And
not just for her, but for others down the line.
Absolutely. And in gratitude, he moved to some new and larger offices maybe 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they were just quite...
Oh.
You know, white medical-looking walls.
It's gorgeous now.
So she redesigned his whole suite of offices with her own furnishings and made them something lovely for him. No, she's accepting of it, and yet she remains optimistic, hopeful. Mm-hmm. She's had wonderful results and less limitations by far than most because of experimental drugs.
Uh-huh.
One... the doctor said to her, there's nothing new other than experimental to try. Mm-hmm. And if you want to try this, you'll have to have no drugs for 3 months, mm-hmm. which will make you feel terrible.
Oh, so they can start on a clean slate.
Exactly.
Yes.
And then the first 3 months of taking this drug, you're apt to feel worse than with no drugs.
Oh.
So that's 6 months of hell.
Yes.
And then he said, if you go through all that, after that, you'll have only a 50-50 chance of great improvement.
So this really is a very adventurous spirit taking on a new
and very few people,
dangerous journey. Yes.
The doctor has told that to, or Dorit has told that mm-hmm. to, have been willing to do this. But she did it. She got through it, and it was hell.
I am so glad to learn about her. Thank you so much.
It was hell.
Yeah.
And, you know, she says Parkinson doesn't kill you, but it can make you wish you were dead at times.
Oh.
But she got through it, and she got the good 50%.
Oh.
And it's given her several years of... she's had good days and bad days, but good days have been very good, and she's continued to travel in foreign countries. This now
does
with
she
friends.
Go? I'm just curious. Oh, with friends, she goes with
now.
People.
Yeah. She used to travel always alone.
Sure,
she just wanted to meet whomever she met and go alone.
I want to ask you something about this letter. What stationery will you use? Let's just for a minute
You know, I have various stationery, and I'll have to go through and look at it and choose, or maybe even buy something. But in my mind's eye, she loves antiques.
Mm-hmm.
I see kind of a warm-looking, antique-looking.
Okay, so you're saying that you're going to choose stationery that represents her.
Yes.
That's lovely. Because people have a choice. It can be something that represents you.
Yes.
Or something that oh, that's lovely. And you'll use really, you know, indelible ink.
That's right? A good idea.
Because this should last a long time. And I'm gathering she does not have children.
She does not have children.
But does she have family? Because this will be found someday.
She's
way down the line. It always is.
Her family, yes, she has family in Denmark. Her parents are deceased. She has a sister in Denmark to whom she's very close, and they have these long phone conversations.
Oh, good. Okay.
She would go home to visit twice a year,
mm-hmm.
and she had to cancel last time.
Oh.
And the sister has two sons.
So there are generations that this will see.
Yes.
Because they always are. They're found sometimes 100 years later in some drawer, in some box.
Yeah.
And they will know something really important about her, just like she does about Isaac Tennyson.
She also has a goddaughter in Copenhagen with whom she's very close, who was a principal ballerina with the Royal Danish Ballet. And now is going to be ballet master soon with the new ballet master at New York City Ballet.
Wonderful.
And she's taught.
So you've done something on another level of wonderful, is you've added to the written family history, because this is a glamorous family any way you look at it.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Thank you so much for sharing this and doing this with me.
My pleasure.
I will keep my eyes open for that name, and I hope to learn more about her.
Thank you, dear. Opportunity. I'm going to go to her. She has a person that helps her with many things who mm-hmm. has a computer with speakers. And I'm going to take the letter and with all three of us there as a surprise and have him turn on the podcast when I get the link and have her listen to it.
Oh, perfect.
And I want to be there.
Oh, good. Okay. So, you know, yes, that's wonderful. Ordinarily, I feel that love letters are private and they should be read privately if people want to. But sometimes you give a gift and you want to be there when it's unwrapped. Yes.
I would just love to see her reaction.
Oh, thank you, dear. Well, until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And just please remember that every friendship, everything that you see or do in life has the seeds of a love letter to someone. And what a gift it is. Thank you, darling.
Thank you, Janet.
Till next time. Bye-bye.